ComingToBook.com.
Well, what's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, January 19th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for what I'm going to call our Thursday meeting show. We'll have Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. We'll chat some NFL playoffs, also some college football week one lines, because some of those are out right now at five dimes. And we'll also be joined by Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com for this week's college basketball capping segment. Plenty to talk about there with him, and of course, college basketball really coming to the forefront now with just three NFL games left to go and then an entire offseason without college football. Without further ado, we'll bring in today's first guest. That is Mr. Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Bradley, how are you today, man?
I am doing just A-OK here, and actually, for a change, rainy Las Vegas morning here. It's actually been cloudy and rainy here the last couple weeks outside of a couple of sunny days, so I'm not used to that since I moved here.
Well, don't worry. It'll change, and it'll be sunny and 80 every day soon enough, and then you can rub it in about how nice the weather is while the rest of us are still digging out from snow and whatever else the case may be. I guess the place to start here for this week's show, we'll chat NFL playoffs here because those games are coming up sooner than the other things we're going to talk about. Go ahead and start with this first one, Green Bay and Atlanta. Had a talk yesterday with Wes Reynolds during our segment looking at some of the more public shops out there in the marketplace. Bovada, of course, being the brand name for that. Had Atlanta -4. That's still where it is. But some other books here today have kind of taken positions on 4.5 with Atlanta as a home favorite.
Yeah, and I do think that's the sharp side, talking with a couple of the guys behind the counter here this week. It looks like it's going to be a clear, you know, pros versus Joes type of game where the Joes are going to continue to ride Green Bay. Why the heck not? I mean, they've won 8 straight games. They've covered 7 of those 8 games. They were on them last week against Dallas. They won for them with an outright upset. You know, and Atlanta's not your blue blood franchise in the NFL, although – you know, the sharps last week and the public to a certain extent were certainly on them with that line going from like 3.5 all the way up to 6. And, you know, Atlanta cruises over, a Seattle team that, had struggled down the stretch of the season, but still a very impressive win there. But it looks like the sharp side is going to be Atlanta again. And that's where I'm going to go with it. And, you know, it's not going to ever be, you know, game of the year material for me this time of the year, because I think that the lines are relatively sharp, and I definitely don't want to have a sizable ticket going up against Aaron Rodgers in his current run here. But, you know, I just think Atlanta's the much more complete team, and I think it's a much more complete team than what Green Bay faced last week in Dallas, believe it or not. I think, you know, Atlanta's defense might be slightly better, and I just think Atlanta offensively, yes, Dallas has Ezekiel Elliott, they have Dak Prescott, they got Witten, and obviously Des Bryant on the outside. I just think Atlanta's got even more playmakers. I wish Julio Jones were 100% healthy. I know he tweaked the ankle a little bit last week, but, you know, Atlanta's just, to me, a fresher team. They had a bye a couple weeks ago. They didn't extend a lot of effort against Seattle because they blew them out. Green Bay, sooner or later, they've been hanging on here in the second half of a lot of their games, specifically against, you know, Chicago. They gave up a couple of touchdowns late there. Minnesota gave up some late scores there. They still got the cover. And then last week, I mean, they almost blew an 18-point lead. Sooner or later, that defense just isn't going to have enough. And, boy, Atlanta's kind of a bad matchup for that Green Bay defense.
Atlanta is definitely a bad matchup. Lots of things to unpack here about this game. We'll sort of go through them in order a little bit. The first one being, you mentioned that Atlanta offense. Kyle Shanahan reportedly taking the job with the San Francisco 49ers. Has to be a distraction here, right?
Yeah, no question about it. But, I mean, look, a lot of these teams are dealing with this time of year. I mean, if you have great success, you're going to get mentions as far as, coordinators interviewing for jobs, maybe even getting jobs. It's just, you know, kind of the nature of the beast this time of the year. New England deals with it year after year when they're making playoff runs. And, no question, distractions, we'll see. I mean, keep in mind, Shanahan grew up in a coaching family. If there's a guy that can handle distractions, I would think he should be able to do it, just because, I mean, he's been in the business for so long, at least growing up with it with his dad as a head coach. So, yeah, distraction, obviously a negative for Atlanta.
What about the experience factor? Because we saw last week Jason Garrett made some really questionable clock management decisions. Dak Prescott struggled in the first half of that game. Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers looked like he was just going to lead Green Bay to a blowout, and then obviously things changed in the second half. For Atlanta, not as much of that. I mean, Matt Ryan's had some rodeos in the playoffs here, but Dan Quinn, a lot of those coming as the defensive coordinator, not necessarily responsible for watching the clock, making those correct decisions, going for fourth downs, all that type of stuff. What about that side of the coin here in terms of the coaching matchup between these two teams?
Yeah, I mean, you got to give the edge to McCarthy for Green Bay, no doubt about it. But, I mean, Dan Quinn's first look in the playoffs was a pretty good look. In fact, I would argue Atlanta had the most impressive performance last week with what they did to Seattle, both on offense and on the defensive side of the ball. And, obviously, he was familiar with Seattle's personnel, being the defense coordinator there a couple years ago. But, yeah, no question about it. I mean, if it's a tight game, and I think a lot of people expect a high-scoring one-possession type of game here, he's going to have to make some decisions as far as down and distance, especially because you're going to see these teams move on each other. And if you want to keep pace, I mean, you might be faced with a fourth and four type of situation at the opponent's 35, 38-yard line, and whether or not you settle for three or you go for it. I mean, there's no question about it. Those types of decisions are going to really factor in who's going to win this game. I'm not as concerned as what I was with Dallas last week, just because, like you mentioned, Matt Ryan's been here. I mean, it's 4 years ago. They were in the NFC Championship game, and they lost it to San Francisco. But he's kind of been there, done that. He hasn't gotten to the next level as far as getting to the Super Bowl. But, you know, I got a much more experienced quarterback behind center, and I just don't think there's going to be the clock management issues that, for Atlanta, that like we saw with Dallas last week.
Well, and then let's look at some positives here for Atlanta, because I just threw out a couple of negatives, and that's certainly what you want to do. I mean, it sounds like you do prefer the Atlanta side. We'll see if the number gets to a point where you like it. But you always want to look at all sides of the game, all sides of the spectrum. So looking at some of the positives for Atlanta here, they're a very tough team to match up with defensively, because they have two running backs that can catch the football. One's a little bit more of a power guy. Another one's a little bit more of a scat back speed type of guy. You know, Kyle Shanahan is an elite level play designer. We've seen that throughout the years. We saw that in Cleveland. We certainly see it here in Atlanta. What happens to this Green Bay secondary here this week?
I don't think it's going to be a good look. Let's just put it that way, because I really don't know how you defend it. I mean, you already mentioned it, Freeman and Coleman. At the running back spots, and not only two guys that were very productive rushing the football, combining for almost 1,600 yards, but you mentioned it, catching the ball out of the backfield. I mean, they combined for 85 receptions coming out of it. And then, you know, well, Julio Jones a little bit banged up, but arguably one of the top wide receivers in the league. You got Sanu, a great pickup from Cincinnati this year. You know, Taylor Gabriel, another guy that's averaged nearly 17 yards per catch. So, there's a lot of weapons, and, you know, you got to give credit to Matt Ryan for being able to distribute the ball to all those different weapons. So, I don't know. I mean, Green Bay obviously struggled late in the game against Dallas. They've been struggling at the end of the season. Obviously, injuries have played a major factor into that. They needed Aaron Rodgers to be on this historical run. Otherwise, I mean, they wouldn't be in this spot. So, I don't think it's a good look, obviously, for the Green Bay defense, and it's one of the reasons why we're sitting here with one of the highest totals we've ever seen regular season or postseason in NFL history.
I love it when you set me up for things, because that's where I wanted to go next was the total. I mean, you look at this game, and it certainly seems like neither one of these defenses is going to provide a whole lot of resistance here. Total 60.5 right now at Bookmaker. We've seen it touch 61 a little bit. Look, I mean, realistically speaking, when you talk about a game that's kind of in uncharted territory like this one, the natural inclination would have to be to look at the under, because you just don't see games that are lined this high, particularly in the NFL playoffs. But that's a really, really difficult bet to make.
Yeah, it's a very difficult bet to make. I'm not going to make an under bet. I can make a lot of cases for the over. But, you know, I think the sharper side would probably be the under, because the public's going to bet over no matter what the number is. But, I'll throw some stats out here. Obviously, why is there a 61 total? Well, I mean, the two teams combined this season are 26-9 of the over. We've had seven straight overs in Green Bay games, and obviously Atlanta, prolific offense. We're probably one of the top 10 in the history of the NFL. They average 34 points per game, 6.7 yards per play in the regular season. Tremendous stats there. But I'll say this. Let's just, Let's throw in the total, this high number at 61, since it is such a prolific number. I mean, actually, even though Green Bay's been on this historical pace as far as offense goes, six of their last eight games would have come under this 61 total. Atlanta, seven of their last eight games would have come under this 61 total. I know the two teams combined for 65 in the first meeting, but, you know, Atlanta's defense, I mean, to have an historical total, I mean, you want two elite offenses with check and check. We got that. And you want two really bad defenses. Well, we got one in Green Bay, particularly on the defensive backfield. I don't think we have a really bad Atlanta defense. In fact, you look at their last five games or so, they're only giving up 19 points per game. So outside of a couple of garbage touchdowns in the New Orleans game, I mean, their defense is playing the best that they've had all season. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to have it in pocket. I know the public's going to be betting the over, and you can make so many cases for the over, but now, I'm just not touching the 61 total, to be honest with you, Adam.
Last thing I want to ask you about, pretty interesting wrinkle for this game here, the final game ever to be played in the Georgia Dome. We see the secondary market really, really high for this game. Lots of tickets available, people trying to take advantage of that. Does the unique situation, including the fact that this is a playoff game, does that alter what you give Atlanta for home field at all?
No, I mean, they already got one of the better home fields. I think it almost gets overstated. I believe now if you count the nine home games that they've had, I mean, they actually still have a losing ATS record at home. I believe it's 4-5 or maybe even only 3-6 at home against the spread this year. So, no, I don't give it any extra juice. I mean, my take as far as, you know, the last game in the Georgia Dome, it's an absolute travesty. I mean, what are we doing with taxpayers? We won't go into too much, but the Georgia Dome is 25 years old, and we're going to be tearing it down. I mean, obviously can't be that bad of a facility. It just hosted a national championship semifinal game. I can't believe that. I mean, they're going to tear it down, but it is what it is in that regard. Obviously, it's going to look. It's the NFC Championship game. Atlanta's got a chance to go to their second ever Super Bowl. I don't know how much. I mean, when we go to the Spinal Tap movie, I don't know if there's necessarily a button that goes to 11 here. It's going to be a 10 as far as the crowd participation. It's going to be loud inside the dome.
I mean, hey, I'm right with you on the stadium thing. You know, the Texas Rangers are getting a new ballpark. Their ballpark opened the same year as Jacobs Field in Cleveland, which is now Progressive Field, of course. And all they've done is make improvements to the ballpark as opposed to get a brand new stadium. So, I mean, I don't know. It seems like a stadium should have a longer shelf life than less than 25 years. But, hey, whatever. It is what it is. If taxpayers are going to pay for it, then people are going to keep doing it. Let's go to this Pittsburgh and New England game here. New England pretty much back up to 6 across the marketplace. 1 5.5 sitting there at BetOnline right now as I'm looking at the odds screen. Yeah, there were some 5.5s out here yesterday, but it looks like New England money coming back in the overnights and then again this morning.
Yeah, and I think that's the correct way. And that's the way I lean. And, you know, these are more leans than anything this time of year. I think there's some of the sharpest lines you'll see. Obviously, they haven't been sharp enough for the books who've gotten their teeth kicked in the last couple of weeks, counting the national championship game along with the playoffs. But, you know, the factors that I like here for New England, I think they've been downgraded too much for the Houston performance. I mean, let's face it. I mean, New England and Gillette Stadium, I think, is a 3, maybe even a 4-point home field advantage. I mean, if you count the 4 and we were sitting at a 5.5 line yesterday, that means on a neutral field, New England's only 1.5 points better than Pittsburgh. I thought that should have been closer to 3 on a neutral. I thought the line should have been closer to 7. I was stunned. The very early Sunday lines in this one were at 4.5. I just think we downgraded New England too much for the Houston game. I mean, it was a rare game where they had 3 turnovers. Tom Brady throws 2 picks. Well, you'd only throw them 2 picks all season long, and yet New England somehow, some way, despite playing poorly, still covered a rather historical point spread, laying 15.5. They found a way, the winning. They covered a huge point spread in that one. You know, Pittsburgh, you know, probably should have crushed Kansas City. I mean, when you're settling for 6 field goals, when you're throwing an interception on first and goal at the 5, I mean, you can make a case there that, you know, they're being undervalued. But, you know, I look at the Patriots as far as, you know, what they've done to the Steelers in the Brady era. I mean, they're 9-3 straight up, 8-3-1 against the spread. So they've taken care of business. And, you know, another thing in New England's factor, I mean, I like, you got to find any edges that you can. Well, I mean, historically speaking, home teams in the AFC Championship game have been dominant, 9-1 straight up, 7-3 against the spread the last 10 years, and with an average win of about 8 points per game. So, and one final factor to me why I'm leaning with New England, Big Ben is an average quarterback on the road. 9-8 touchdown to interception ratio, he completes 59%. At home, he's elite. I mean, he completes 70%, quarterback rating about 117, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. On the road, he's mediocre. So I think when you add it all up and the fact that people are questioning Tom Brady, I think you get a very fiery Tom Brady here. And anything less than a touchdown, I'm laying it with New England.
Well, and, you know, it's such an interesting thing because you look at this game and people are probably viewing this as, you know, you've got two quarterbacks there in Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger, but the clear key to this game for New England is stopping Le'Veon Bell, because Le'Veon Bell is just a machine right now. I mean, he's one of the best running backs that we've seen in the NFL in quite some time, so long as he can stay away from the reefer. So when you look at a situation like this here where, you know, maybe Pittsburgh's able to control the clock a little bit in this one, do you still like Brady to put up those same efficient numbers that he's been doing throughout the year?
Well, yeah, I mean, but I'll say this. I mean, is there going to be finally some wear and tear on Bell? I mean, historically, I know he got an off week a couple weeks ago. They gave him week 17 off against Cleveland. But, I mean, reality is, yeah, he's got the production, playoff record 337 yards. But, you know, I started to see him wear down in the second half of the Kansas City game. And, you know, in the first matchup, and I know you can kind of throw it out the window because Landry Jones was quarterbacking the Steelers. But I thought New England did a solid job keeping Bell in check. In fact, LeGarrette Blount actually outrushed Bell in that game substantially. So, you know, if there's, you know, the thing that I always worried about New England is when they're playing elite defenses, you look where they've struggled in the playoffs in the recent past. It's been against the Jets. It's been against the Ravens. It's been against the Broncos last year. I mean, all those teams had elite defenses. Now, I like Pittsburgh's defense, particularly the future of that defense is definitely improving, but I still don't think it's an elite defense. And, you know, New England's never really had a problem with the elite offenses. I mean, you go back to the Peyton Manning days at Indianapolis. They were always able to outscore those teams and come up with a game plan to really, you know, fluster in Peyton Manning and company there. And again, they haven't had trouble, you know, going score for score with Pittsburgh. So, you know, I'm not that concerned with New England's defense you know, matching up against Le'Veon Bell. If there's anyone that can stop him, I think it's Belichick. And I'm also worried about Bell's workload, particularly in the second half of the game.
Well, I guess that's kind of the question is, you know, how have you viewed Ben Roethlisberger throughout the year? I mean, 2 years ago, this guy was putting up obscene numbers. Last year, kind of came back to earth a little bit, looked more like his average. Same thing here this year. If Big Ben needs to go out there and maybe we're not even talking about winning the game, but just covering this game for Pittsburgh, is that a concern for you nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, it is, and, you know, I kind of broke it down. I mean, he's still elite at home. Again, quarterback rating of 117 on the road this year. It's 78, which is relatively average. And, you know, of course he can make big plays, but, I mean, he can also make big plays for the other team, throw a couple of interceptions. And if he's going to have to play, you know, he can't have a two-interception game, obviously, in this one. But the performance says that he's going to throw a pick or two, at least if you're going off of what we've seen so far this entire season on the road. And yeah, I don't know if you can necessarily, you know, do that and still cover the spread, because, I mean, let's face it, New England had a very bad game last week. You know, chances are there's going to be regression towards the mean. New England very rarely has a couple of bad games in a row. I mean, Pittsburgh played very well. I mean, outside of the red zone, they didn't, but for the most part, Pittsburgh's played very well and consistently played well here down the stretch. So, yeah, again, I mean, look, we are down to the final four teams here. We have maybe the best four quarterbacks left that we've ever seen as far as championship games. I can make a strong case for any of the four teams to cover the point spread. I can make a strong case for any of the four teams to win. I can make, you know, as far as the favorites, I can easily see New England and Atlanta winning these games by double digits. So, I mean, I think they're the sharpest lines. I think we clearly have the four best teams. And maybe the seedings don't say that, but I think we are clearly down to it this year. I don't see distinct advantages for either. I mean, I got to make a case because I have customers and they want my picks and my leans on the games. But, you know, overriding thought that I have this weekend is, you know, enjoy it, because I think they're two tremendous matchups, particularly at the quarterback spots. And, you know, this to me is more about having maybe some pizza money on these games than having a little bit, not a lot.
Well, we got a listener question to talk about here, and then we'll get into some of these college football week one lines that are out at five dimes. I had a listener, Mark, ask why cappers make creating lines so complex, so that he's come across some methods that are, you know, fairly easy, tend to be pretty accurate, to take, you know, 5-10 minutes per game to do. So he's just sort of wondering, you know, what's the mindset there for you in terms of making your lines a pretty intricate process?
Well, it's not about necessarily, all right. We'll say 5-10 minutes a game. Well, I mean, when there's 60 games in a college football weekend, yeah, I mean, that's a lot. Just come up with a line. And then, you know, yeah, it's one thing to come up with a line. I don't take 10 minutes to come up with a line, to be honest with you. I have 5 minutes a game to come up with a line. As far as, you know, I could just plug in power ratings, come up with a line. The reality is, you know, understanding the betting markets, where the money's going to go. And you also got to keep track of what's, you know, in fact happening throughout the course of the week, whether it be injuries, press conferences, and whatnot. And look, I mean, when you combine the side of the total, you know, that takes a lot. I mean, this time of year, is it a full-time gig, you know, doing a couple of NFL playoff games? Absolutely not. And you don't want to overthink it as far as coming up with the lines. But you also got to realize this time of year, you're dealing with the sharpest lines that you have the entire year. So you're trying to find any edge that you can, and maybe it's just simply being contrarian to the public. Now, that hasn't worked the last couple of weeks with the public, and maybe it seems like it's so easy because the public's had an historically, you know, great couple of weeks. In fact, I mean, it's been historic against the books, and now everyone, anyone can do it. Well, I'm going to tell you what, sooner or later, the books are going to have their revenge. And maybe it's not this weekend, maybe it's not even for the Super Bowl, but I can tell you one thing, the books will be spending all off season wondering what went wrong, and they have millions of dollars as far as, you know, what to spend and look at, whether it be computer systems, whether it be bringing in different teams of handicappers and lines makers to take on the public. And if the public thinks it's just easy, you know, it's a little, you know, I spend, you know, a couple hours a night, this and that, you're going to be in for a rude awakening. So it's just not setting the lines. It's, you know, understanding all the lines, side and totals, where the market's betting, and also finding any edges that you can. To me, and that's also, I write up every game. So, I mean, yeah, I can spend 8 hours a week just come up with lines on the game. Yeah, there's my lines. But, I mean, if people follow my newsletter, you know, I write a game write-up for every single game every single week. So that obviously takes time. So anyone that questions you can question my picks any day of the week, but if you're going to question the work ethic, I got a real problem with that.
No, that wasn't the case at all. That wasn't what the listener was doing. It was more wondering about, you know, and I talked with a couple of other handicappers about this already. You're one of the last ones to get this question. You mentioned that the long days that you work, the 15, 16-hour days, and the listener just made a point to say that, you know, there's so much randomness to sports that it almost seems like overkill, but I kind of came back and said, you know, the thing is that you're trying to eliminate as much of that variance as you possibly can, because you certainly can't get rid of all of it.
Yeah, and why do you put in the hours? Number one, it's easy for me because I'm single and I don't have any kids, so I put in the hours. And, you know, you try to eliminate anything. It's as simple as, to me, you know, it takes the time. I look up the weather forecast for every single game. I go hour by hour because I can't trust on, you know, Scores and Odds do a great job of at least putting the weather up there. But you got to go hour by hour. A lot of times those forecasts are just for that particular day's weather. I do that because, you know, the last thing I want is, you know, I got an overplay and I turn on the TV and, you know, there's 25-mile-an-hour winds in the game. That's eliminating variance. Just key in, you know, following the injury reports. I mean, sometimes stuff, you know, that doesn't get promoted as far as, you know, offense and defensive line injuries as much as the quarterbacks, wide receivers, and running backs. I mean, those are out there for the public to digest. But, you know, say a team's, you know, maybe the guys aren't out, but they got a couple of injuries where guys are banged up on the offensive line. That's why you put in the time for that. That eliminates some of the variance. You don't want to have a pick out there, and then they got 3-4 guys that are banged up on the offensive line. So, you know, weather, injuries, and stuff like that are a big reason. And you're dealing with 120. You know, it's easy for the NFL. I mean, I don't think the guys that are just doing the NFL put in as much of the time. But, you know, I like to deal with 128 college teams. And when you're dealing with that each and every week, I mean, that's why the hours are put in there.
Well, and also, I mean, I remember when we were talking about the FCS playoffs a little bit, you do some power rating stuff for the FCS as well with the non-conference portion. And then, of course, you can hit some of those we would assume, softer lines there in Division I AA. So, I mean, you certainly
very
are putting
soft,
in a lot
very
of
very soft.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, part of it is, I think, too, that sometimes it can be kind of tough for people to grasp that you're doing this across all sports. You have clients that want action in all sports. Now, football being the NFL and college football, you know, those are the two big markets for you. But, you know, it's not like you're spending 15 hours a day on one sport.
No, absolutely not. And you know, there's a couple of 15-hour days. And the reason, I mean, some of my hours are, you know, doing shows like this. I mean, I do 10 or 15 of these a week. So, I mean, that adds into it. Some of it's, you know, typing up stuff, doing some formatting. So is it strictly just handicapping for me that goes into my 80-some-hour work week? No, absolutely not. Maybe it's, you know, talking to customers, talking to behind the books. So it's not, you know, directly just, you know, reading stories, making up lines and stuff like that. I mean, there's obviously a lot more other things that go into it. And look, let's be perfectly candid. There's also some marketing to be had in this. Hey, do I have, you know, a game of the week type of this week? Do I have a game of the month, game of the year? Do I like this play strong enough? So there's thought processes on the marketing side that also come into why you're putting in 80 plus hours a week.
Man, and just think if you always had to drive down to the brick and mortar shops instead of using the apps that are out there now. Just think of the time that takes, the additional travel time and all that. Man, it's, you know, I think a lot of people do tend to underestimate what all goes into being a professional handicapper. And you know, it's a lot of hours, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And you know, you're certainly one of the best at it. So thanks for giving us a little bit of a peek there, you know, into what goes on week by week for you. Let's check on some of these college football lines here at Five Dimes. I believe there's 16 games up here for the first weekend. Some of them are more marquee matchups, Florida State and Alabama, which is, of course, a number that came out pretty quickly. Virginia Tech and West Virginia, North Carolina State, South Carolina, Florida, Michigan, A&M, UCLA. There are some other games. Stanford and Rice is up there, Portland State and BYU. Anything kind of, you know, I guess the first place to look at here is one of the things that we can use these lines for is to sort of get a barometer of what the odds makers are looking at for these teams heading into next year. Were there any of these numbers that really stood out to you as, you know, hey, they're a lot higher or a lot lower on this team than I am?
Oh, no question. I mean, I'll start it off. I think that the best value bet on the board still, it opened 9, it's up to 10. South Florida, I think, you know, new coach, Charlie Strong, man, they're a little too low on them. Keep in mind, San Jose State also has a brand new coach. San Jose State clearly underachieved this year. South Florida didn't. I mean, they got a new coach not because they struggled, but because they did so well, 11-2. I'll just keep it very simple here. They almost have everyone back. Now, Marlon Mack, their fine running back, declared early for the draft. That hurts them, but pretty much everyone's back for them, including Quentin Flowers, a great quarterback. He inherits a very good situation. Charlie Strong's very familiar with the Florida area. I mean, he spent almost his entire assistant coaching career there, particularly cut his teeth as a defensive coordinator of Florida. I don't think there's a huge adjustment for them. And let's just be honest, they just got done laying almost 2 touchdowns, or at least double digits, to a South Carolina team on a neutral field. Now you're telling me they're only going to be laying 10 to San Jose State, a team that clearly underperformed. That line's way off. I'm just, you know, I don't say this in the regular season. You won't see me hardly at all say it, but that's off 4 or 5 points. Clearly, South Florida is not getting enough respect. They got downgraded too much for having a new coach. San Jose State, I mean, you factor in the home field. You know, I didn't downgrade them or upgrade them. I got a lot to learn from them. That's a team as far – hired a obscure assistant coach out of Oregon State. So there's a lot to be learned from them. So I didn't downgrade them with a first-year coach. I didn't upgrade them. So I kept them the same. And South Florida pretty much the same. I even downgraded South Florida a couple points. And still, I came up with a line around 15, and you're laying 10 right now. So I think that's – a soft number that's just, you know, 4 or 5 points off that I was a little bit surprised. I think Michigan's still getting too much credit. They're laying 7.5 against Florida. Now, Florida loses a lot on the defensive side of the ball. In fact, I mean, don't believe me, just flip on the draft at the end of April. They'll probably have 5 guys off their defense draft in the first 3 rounds. But also, Michigan might only have 1 or 2 starters coming back on the defensive side of the ball. They lose a tremendous amount of experience there. I mean, Harbaugh's done a great job of recruiting, But to lay 7.5 against Florida, I do expect Florida's offense to be upgraded this year, no matter who's behind center. That one I had more power rated around 4. I think Michigan's been overvalued almost all year. I mean, we saw how they finished up. They lost 3 of their last 4 games. You know, Florida had a very impressive bowl performance against Iowa. So I was actually surprised that that number was above a touchdown.
Any of the other ones really stand out to you? I mean, what's interesting to me here is that, you know, you've got Texas with a new head coach, Temple with a new head coach, you know, Cal. I mean, Sonny Dykes is still there for now, but we'll see what kind of happens with that situation. Who else? There's somebody else. Indiana's got a new head coach.
Oh, Cal. Sonny Dykes is gone. Sonny Dykes is gone. So they got rid of him and hired Wilcox, the defense coordinator from Wisconsin.
Yeah. So, all right, there you go. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. I must have just lost that one in the shuffle there. But there are some teams lined here with new head coaches, and that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there was some initial value on Notre Dame, and I will be selling Notre Dame this year. But, you know, I'll buy him in the game week one. You know, you look at that particular matchup, Notre Dame, I mean, when that line first came out at 7.5, it's up to 10.5. You know, I power rated it at 12. You know, I probably power rated it at 10.5, but I gave it a little extra because I just know the public's going to be on Notre Dame to rebound. I don't think they will for the season. But, you know, this particular matchup, keep in mind their new defense coordinator, Mike Elko, was a guy that just prepped for Temple in the bowl game. So he knows Temple's personnel inside and out. He just spent the entire bowl season prepping for that Temple defense while he was the defense coordinator at Wake Forest. So I think that's an edge for Notre Dame in that regard. You know, Jeff Collins is a good coach. I think the line opened 7.5 because, you know, Temple probably on a neutral field at the end of the season, because that was a Temple team, keep in mind, that had covered 11 straight games, might have been favored over Notre Dame at the end of this year. So that's why that number was that low. But, you know, Notre Dame would be better. I don't think enough to keep Brian Kelly's job when it's all said and done at the end of the season. But, yeah, that line was way too short. And, you know, kudos to whoever bet Notre Dame out there at -7.5 with that game being up to 10.5. You know, Texas game, you know, I actually power rated almost – believe it or not, I power rated almost all these games already. You know, I put that one at 14. I think, you know, you look at – he is inheriting a great situation there in Texas. I mean, Charlie Strong underperformed there, but he didn't underperform – in the recruiting aspect. And I think that the system fits just fine as far as the offense and where they're going to go there in the future. You know, Maryland overachieved a little bit getting a bowl game in the first year under DJ Durkin. That one at 14, I think is just almost right on the money. Kudos to Five Dimes for getting that one at 15. California, North Carolina, I think it's about right. North Carolina's got a lot of guys that they got to replace. I mean, you look at Mitch Trubisky left early. Elijah Hood says he's going to come back, then he decides to leave. So they got some question marks there. California with a new coach, that'll be a team that I got to follow along because, again, they're hiring a coach later in the process than what a lot were. I mean, that was very late in the game. And obviously Justin Wilcox, familiar with the West Coast. He was a defense coordinator in the Pac-12 for a time period. But, again, a first-year head coach, not a great spot there for Cal traveling across the country.
Well, thanks for correcting me on that Sonny Dykes thing, and I do apologize to listeners for letting that one slip through the cracks. But Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com, what's going on over there at the website right now?
Yeah, BradPowersSports.com. I mean, if you want to check out the predictions as far as this upcoming week, as far as the NFC and AFC championship games, we're on a great run here in the NFL playoffs, 6-2. I do put out picks for that. You probably got an idea where I'm leaning if you listen to the show. But I also break down and give you a line, all those five dime lines that we got in college football week one in it. And I put my own line out on all those games. So if you want some value there, it's up there. It's $10 for the week. If you like what you see, and, you know, I put every single game and every single pick that we've had this past season is available in this week's issue. So if you want to digest that, you like what you see, you say, hey, what the heck? You know, I'll try this guy out for next season. Well, you will get the lowest price offered available right now for next season if you want to sign up for the upcoming season. It's $79. BradPowersSports.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at BradPowers7.
Oh, Brad, thank you so much for your time, man. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. Take care, my friend.
Good stuff there with Brad Powers, BradPowerSports.com. A couple of things real quickly here before we bring Ralph Michaels on to the show. The first, important to shop around. Talk about this on every show. Going to keep drilling this point home because it's very, very important. One of the sports books that you can have at your disposal, DSI Sportsbook. Our Bang the Book radio listeners can head on over there, Use the promo code BTB Radio. That'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up, and then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. A couple of other things that we have going over at bangthebook.com that I don't talk enough about, but I certainly should. We've got some contests that are going on over there. We've got a mock sports book. There's a leaderboard for that. We've also got a forum if you want to check that out, post with anything. But you can join our streaker contest, which if you have an account over at DSI Sportsbook, you can use that, either one of those promo codes. You can either use Bang200 or the BTB Radio promo code. Get an account over there, and then you can play in this streaker contest. Actually get something from DSI Sportsbook. The more you get, if you get up to a streak of seven correct picks, you get something from DSI Sportsbook. So definitely in your best interest to get an account over there. Head on over to bangthebook.com. In the community drop-down, go to contests. You'll see the streaker. And then right there, you can take advantage of that. Also available to anybody that has an account over at Bookmaker. One more guest for today's show. We'll go ahead and bring him on the air here. Sorry for keeping you on hold, but it's Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, man?
Adam, great. You know, I love listening to you and Brad in college football. And I'm just going to throw in one more note. He talked about his top play being South Florida traveling out to San Jose. I'll tell you what, there's a lot of times we talk about northern teams going to Florida in that heat and humidity. I've read numerous times when those Florida kids are excited as heck to not play in 95 degrees and hot and humid weather, they're going to be excited to play up in San Jose with temperatures in the 80s and very comfortable.
That's actually a really excellent point, especially after you practice in that all summer long, and then you get a chance to go to the West Coast, see something different. That's a really, really strong point to make. And, you know, I think that's a really good segue into our college basketball segment, because listeners know you excel when it comes to the situational handicapping, and that's definitely a situational edge. We talk about them all the time with the schedule, but you can get some of those situational edges based on travel spots as well, where kids are just excited to go somewhere and see something a little bit different. We've got a long list of talking points here on today's show. I want to start with some futures stuff because we haven't done a whole lot of that here on your segment, but this is probably the time of year when you want to start looking into some of those things, whether it's buying a good team that loses a marquee game or trying to buy a pretty good team before the price gets away based on what they may do here in the near future. I see that there's a couple of teams that you've got some futures investments on thus far.
You know, there's, Florida State, we talked about a few weeks ago that they're my pick to win the ACC, and I still think there's value. Now, Florida State was 100-1 before the season started. So, you know, you're betting into quite a few people having played them down. But we're to the point now where, you know, don't waste money on futures. You know, when you're taking a 1,000-1 shot, you're not going to win that future. There's probably only 15 teams that realistically can win the national championship in college basketball. And be careful. You have to have a team that's a top 20 offense, a top 15 defense, and has depth. So Florida State is a team still at 25-1 that I think can run the table. They'll be a 1-2, at worst a 3 seed, 11 guys averaging double-digit minutes, guys that can score, they rebound as well as anyone. They're a deep team that I think is worth even down at 25-1. Another team going to go to the opposite coast. You know, Arizona has slid under the radar. You know, they're 16-2. They're my pick to win the Pac-12. We'll talk about them again in a minute as a potential number one seed. Great game coming up this weekend at UCLA, but at 40-1, you're getting a team that's been there, that's done that, that has depth, that's missing a couple guys. They had an injury. They had a player who can't play yet because of failing a drug test, but he'll be back in. So you've got a team now that's playing guys that wouldn't normally play, giving them depth of coming here into the tournaments and then into March Madness.
Yeah, and for Arizona, that player is Alonzo Trier, who's actually a pretty damn good player. So when they get him back, he'll be a really significant upgrade for them. But here's the question on Arizona, and we're going to talk quite a bit here about Arizona in this show. And I guess I should mention it now before we save it until later in the show where we can actually break down the game. Is now the buy point for Arizona, or do you wait and see what happens in this L.A. back-to-back with USC tonight, UCLA on Saturday?
Well, since I think they're going to beat UCLA, my suggestion would be to play them before that game. if they beat UCLA, they're going to come down 30. You know, one bet's going to drop them 35 or 30 to one, depending on the size of the bet. But in my viewing, 40 to one is as high as they're ever going to get. You know, Trier, for those that don't know, someone had given him a banned substance. The NCAA approved his story. They believe him. He can practice. He travels. He just cannot play until there's 0.00% of that in his body. They don't know when that's going to be. So that's a big difference, too. It's not a person who can't play with the team, travel with the team, be part of the team. He is part of the team. He just can't actually play in the games.
You know, and what's interesting about that, and this kind of speaks back to the whole situational element, is they're going to get a pretty big boost when he comes back because, like I said, he's a quality player. The difference is it may take a little bit of time for him to reassimilate into the lineup. So, you know, that's the situation that you want to watch because you can make a case that you might want to fade Arizona a little bit right when he comes back. But then as he gets into a rhythm with his teammates, as they start working him into the rotations, Arizona is going to be a bye team, and that's probably going to coincide with when they're hitting the Pac-12 conference tournament and then subsequently March Madness.
Yes and no. I mean, the difference is, I mean, with him practicing, he's practicing with the ones still. He's splitting time with the ones. So that's a little bit different where he's acclimated to the system. But again, we know that being the general on the court is much different than being in practice. So I do agree with you, but not to the extent of a player coming back from an injury that wasn't able to practice.
All right, fair enough. Nothing wrong with a little bit of a disagreement there. And I don't think there's going to be any disagreement here in terms of you're looking ahead to your number one seeds as things currently stand. We've got less than 2 months now until the big dance begins. Who would be your number one overall seed right now?
Well, you know, I think it's going to be tough for them, not surprisingly, to give it to Gonzaga. You know, I'm going to get a lot of flack from that. And my Villanova backers are going to go crazy when they don't hear their name even as a number one seed, but they're a team I'm going to leave out. I think Gonzaga runs the table. I think they're going to be undefeated. I think since they've been there and done that, they're going to be the overall number one or number two seed. I'm going to call for a long shot. Heck, let's make them number one as they'll be undefeated going in, going into Selection Sunday.
Interesting. That's quite a limb to go out on, but I can certainly see your thought process there, especially after what they did to St. Mary's, who's a pretty good team and certainly their biggest competition in the West Coast Conference. And that looked like child's play for them. So, you know, I mean, it certainly makes a whole lot of sense right now. So if it's not Gonzaga that gets the number one overall seed, if they are the number two in terms of 1 through 68, who would the other team be?
Oh, it's Kentucky. Clearly. I don't see, you know, again, I'm expecting Villanova to lose an upcoming road game here. And I think their depth's going to hurt them in their tournament a little bit. So I'm calling them for a two seed, but I think Kentucky is the best team right now. And I think moving forward, the way the freshmen are really starting to gel, that they will be the number one overall seed. The SEC is very weak. You know, South Carolina, Florida are the only challenges, and I don't even perceive them as an issue. So Kentucky, Gonzaga, my number one and two overall seeds.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Was that the stance that you were very clearly taking at about this time yesterday, or did that South Carolina-Florida game, which was, for all intents and purposes, pretty ugly there in Columbia last night, did that just, you know, add that extra reinforcement that you were looking for?
No, you know, South Carolina was a team we talked about. If you, you know, you were kind enough to mention the college basketball guide I do, and if anyone downloads it, they can go to wagertalk.com and download it for free. They'll see that I have South Carolina as my number two defensive team in the country. Florida's number 19, so that game did not shock me at all.
All right, well, let's look at your other two number one seeds here. What are you looking at in terms of your third overall seed?
No, right now I'm gonna say it's the top ACC team. And since I've gone on the limb and already called for Florida State to win that, I will pick Florida State. You know, right now they survived Notre Dame's ambush of 3 points last night. They've got Louisville coming up this weekend. You know, and the ACC is just a grind. You can have three or four losses in that ACC and still be a number one seed. So right now I think it's either North Carolina or Florida State. Committee will give the ACC, especially if a team sweeps the regular season and the tournament, then there's no question they will be a one seed. I'm going to pick Florida State, and my backfall for that would be North Carolina. I think Duke loses a few more games, but, you know, you talked about coming back from injuries and being ready to play. When their team is back and Coach K is back in a couple weeks, they're going to be a team that, with Emile Jefferson missing a couple games and, you know, with the other situations they had with players getting suspended for tripping, you know, they're going to be a team that's going to start gelling late too, and they're one to watch out for.
Well, then one more number one seed, and you're going to go out west for this one.
I am. You know what? The Pac-12 is very, very strong this year. You've got UCLA, Oregon, and Arizona all probably going to be one, two, or three seeds. And I'm going to go on the limb and pick Arizona. Again, a team we talked about, obviously, if I think they're going to be a great bet at a future at 40-1, I think they're going to be a one or two seed. They have UCLA this weekend. And I think they have the depth and the defense to pull out the conference, be a very high seed, and go deep into the tournament.
Well, let's start to look into some of the stuff going on here this weekend. Obviously, March Madness is still a little ways away, but it's never too early to talk about March Madness because it's such a fun time of year. But let's look at your technical play of the week here. This is something that we've done here on the last couple of shows where we looked at your top technical play, your top situational play. You sort of walk our listeners through your thought process, how you come to your conclusions. For the technical play this week, we're going to go to the SEC.
We are. Mississippi State is a team that I looked to play against early. They were number 340 of the 351 teams in experience. But as we talked, as gamblers, your job is to find where there's value. And I've completely backtracked and did a turnaround on Mississippi State. Now they're a team I'm looking at. They're a team that's playing loose. They are a bunch of young kids. You know, this is not quite the Michigan Fab Five from years ago, but it's that same mentality. You start to pull a few upsets. You start to know you can win on the road, and all of a sudden, you're a very solid team. They're 5-0 ATS on the road. Even more impressive, they're 4-1 straight up on the road, pulling four upsets. They're going to play Tennessee. Tennessee now is 3-3 straight up at home, but they're only 1-5 ATS. A couple other points to bring up on Tennessee. Tennessee was a team that was ranked in the upper half of the SEC. They played a brutal schedule thus far, I think the number two schedule in my rankings. And now they're 9-9. After losing a couple games, being 9-7 and you're 9-9, you have intense pressure to not fall under 500. And, by the way, Tennessee hosts Kentucky on Tuesday, so you don't get all the kids focused for this game when they're looking ahead.
So where are you setting this number at? I don't know if you said it and I didn't hear you or not, but what do you think the number is?
Mississippi State will be getting about 7 points. So okay. I'm happy to take anything over five with them on the road to Tennessee.
Okay, so anything over five there for that one. And then we got your situational play of the week here. We've got one from the Mountain West. I don't think we've talked too much about the Mountain West here on your segments, but what is it that about the setup for this game that you really like?
You know what? UNLV is another team that I look to play against early, and, you know, they had a new coach. They hired a coach. He left to go to Texas Tech. They had to get a new coach. So they were a team that had a lot of new moving pieces, and I look to play against them early, and quite frankly, they burned me a few times. But now they're at home. They played on Tuesday, and now they're home on Saturday. So you've got a nice five-day period with both games being on home. Air Force played on the road Wednesday, quick turnaround, traveling again on Saturday. Air Force has only played a few road games. They're 0-2 straight up in ATS away, two lined road games. While UNV is strong at home, 9-3 ATS at home, 6-1 ATS as a favorite. They're off a home loss. And then one more thing I'm going to look at. UNLV just lost to San Diego State. San Diego State, not the same team they've been in the past, but their defense is the second best in the Mountain West. one I ranked 95. Now they're playing the worst defense in the Mountain West. Air Force's defense, smaller players, obviously, because of the Air Force Academy, have to play that zone. They're number 280 in my defensive rankings. So a big step down for UNLV to be able to get this win. UNLV is about a 1 point. They're about 1 point better in my power ratings, plus the home edge. So I expect to lay, you know, in the 4 or 5 range, but I'll play UNLV anything up to -6.5 or less as this play.
You know what? This was something I kind of had some thoughts about in terms of the Mountain West conferences. You have some schools that are in very high elevation. You have others that really aren't. Of course, San Jose State, San Diego State, those being the two that really stand out here. Do you feel like coming out of altitude is also a problem for some of those teams?
You know what? It certainly can be, depending on the situation. You know, there's nothing I have numbers-wise that says play a team after playing that. You know, you go up to Wyoming. Wyoming doesn't draw the attention as high altitude. It's the highest altitude in the FBS. It's 7,000 feet. So when you go and play into that Wyoming situation and the game after, I do look at playing it, but I don't have any numbers to substantiate that it is a solid play. You know, I think Vegas does make an adjustment. We talked about playing those Colorado, Utah back-to-back games, and I found this year Vegas has made a 1.5 point adjustment in those situations. I think when you get to tricky Mountain West teams like Wyoming or New Mexico is 5,000 feet as well, then you can sneak some value in playing against teams in those roles.
Well, fair enough. I think that's something that, you know, we always think about the difficulties of going to altitude or maybe playing a back-to-back in altitude. But, you know, to use a baseball example, the Colorado Rockies, obviously they hit very, very well at home, but there's a Coors Field effect on the road as well, where they see pitches they don't see at home, ball breaks differently, all that type of thing. So there's a negative impact for the Rockies when they leave the friendly confines of Coors Field. So I was just sort of wondering if maybe it was something that did carry over into other sports as well. A couple other things that we want to talk about here on this segment. The best two games for Saturday, in your mind, we've already touched on one of them a little bit. We'll go a little bit more in-depth with that Arizona-UCLA game in a minute. But Louisville and Florida State, another chance here at a measuring stick type of game for the Seminoles.
You know, and they've done it so far. They've gone into Virginia. They played that slow pace that Virginia does. They faced, you know, North Carolina, which is middle of the road. They were able to handle the 3-point barrage of Notre Dame. So that's the most impressive thing about me with Florida State is they've been able to handle all three types of different situations in a very short period of time. So, you know, I'm looking at this line to be Florida State about 4. Again, they get the edge. They played Notre Dame last night. They're home for a second game this weekend. And on the flip side, Louisville has to go play a very improved Clemson team tonight, if you're listening to the podcast on Wednesday. Short turnaround, travel down to Tallahassee, and again, they have some depth issues as well. So, you know, while it's not one of my top plays, you know, I'm expecting the line to be 4, 4.5. I would play Louisville if the line was less than that. If it's not, excuse me, I would play Florida State if the line was a few points less than that. I don't think it will be, but I think this will be another situation where Florida State's depth gets them through this.
Well, and that's a big thing here is depth. I mean, when you talk about teams coming out of the holiday break, and there is that period where teams have final exams for the fall semester or the winter quarter or the fall quarter, whatever all these different schools do, games are kind of limited. Then you get into the holidays, games are kind of limited again. Then everybody starts conference play pretty much that first week of January there. So now you're into this rhythm where you're playing, as we've talked about before, Thursday, Sunday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, you know, sometimes Saturday, Monday. So depth is a really, really big thing here. And I think that's something really important to point out at this stage of the game.
Well, you know, and it depends on your program. You know, it's, you know, the biggest thing going into this, you know, I should have been a little clearer. You know, Louisville's missing point guard Quentin Snyder, and so far the line hasn't been adjusted, and I'm not quite sure why. You know, they probably because they still handled Duke. They won that game 78-69. But with Snyder out, they're going to be playing a backup point guard, and then their third point guard, who now be playing backup, is a freshman who's only averaging 5 minutes. So when you can run 6'4" guards XRM at Florida State, and you have 6'6" guards guarding a freshman, that's where you run into the issues.
Well, we've talked a little bit about this Arizona-UCLA game already. We already let the cat out of the bag. You said you do like Arizona here in this spot. But this is a really interesting game because you kind of have a case where you've got a UCLA team that wants to just run the floor. They have the athleticism to do it. They put up a ton of shots. That's not really Sean Miller's style.
It's not. You know, we talked about how I have South Carolina as the number two defensive team in the guide. UCLA is the number one offensive team in the country. I have them clearly as the number one team. They're averaging 93 points. You know, when you look at the Pac-12, a lot of us, you know, a lot of East Coast listeners and viewers don't realize Arizona 16-2, Oregon 16-2, UCLA 18-1. UCLA's only loss was at Oregon. Arizona's only two losses were neutral games against Gonzaga and Butler. So, again, no bad loss among them. Now, the difference is Arizona is the second-best defensive team in the Pac-12. You don't think about them as a defensive team, but they've played a very difficult schedule. They're only allowing 61 points per game. They're my number 13 defensive team. They have the depth to go in to UCLA. Now, one thing I like about this game is they're playing the back-to-back, of course, at USC and then at UCLA, but they didn't have a game this past week. Remember, they only had one game last week. They had the Arizona-Arizona State game, and when they play that in-state rivalry, they only schedule one game instead of two games that week. So while they're playing the back-to-back on the road, they come in much more rested than they would be if this schedule was any other weekend.
Yeah, that's a really excellent point to make there. And those are the ways that you want to look at all of these games because, you know, we talked about this a little bit already with some past guests. And I think you and I discussed this as well, is that when you start flipping over to college basketball as somebody that's been doing college football and NFL betting, and now there's really not a whole lot going on. If you want to try to beat the NBA market, you can, but really for a lot of people where the value is in college basketball. And you have this premier Pac-12 matchup. You know you want to have some sort of action on the game because it's going to be on TV, because it's a big game. But those are all important factors that Ralph just talked about. And that's really, if you're not doing it in that way, if you're not looking at all of those perspectives, you're doing yourself a major, major disservice.
And no question. And, you know, now, again, we talked about this game, and I believe Sports Cheetah, you have him on a few times. And we have a big difference in this game. You know, Matt Holt, who's the vice president of SDG Technologies as well, you know, I make this game 4.5. They both make this game 7.5. Now, obviously, me backing the dog, I'm hoping it opens 7.5. But I would still be happy playing Arizona 4 or 4.5. So this may be a game that's near the very top of my card on Saturday. So while we're talking about an impressive game, it very well could be my top play of the weekend as well.
Well, I think that there's another good lesson, and this is something our listeners kind of have a challenge with sometimes. And I've had a lot of them reach out and tell me this, that, you know, they don't have a whole lot of friends that understand what they're talking about when it comes to betting. Maybe they have some guys that are, you know, very public, just love to throw money around. They don't think too much about what they're doing, and they don't look for those types of things. Here's a situation for you where you've done this for a long time. You know what works for you. You know what you want to achieve, but you also have some other people whose opinions that you respect that have a much different stance on this game. So do you find that it's challenging for you to go with what you believe when you've got people on the other side, or is it just one of those things where you go, you know what, I know what works for me, I'm going to go ahead and do it?
Well, if you've done it, if you've had success, and if you have confidence, that's what you're looking for. You know, we talked about this on a previous segment. If you're writing down the positives and negatives, and if you have 6 positives and no negatives, you did not do your job. Certainly there are negatives. certainly, you know, Arizona's playing the second of back-to-back. Certainly they're playing the best offense in the country. Certainly they're, you know, it's a situation where they don't have a point guard to cover Lonzo Ball. I mean, when you have a 6'6" point guard who passes like he does as a freshman, well, you know, he's going to be in the NBA next year. So, you know, again, you have to look at the negatives. You want other people to have different opinions. Then you can argue them out, get to your point. And if you get to your point and you can convince the other person, well, maybe I am a little bit wrong. That's the situation where you're saying, I know I'm right. I know I have a strong case. And I know that's going to be one of my plays on my card.
One more thing to look at here. You wanted to look at some teams that have excelled in an underdog role or in a favorite role. And I think that this is really important and something that we've talked about a little bit before in the past. You know, you have these teams in favorite roles that simply play down to their competition. On the flip side, you have these teams in underdog roles that'll play up to their competition. But then if they do become favorites, you know, then they may struggle a little bit in those particular spots. So who were some of the teams that you had in mind here for this part?
Well, you know, let me tell you right now, the best and the worst coming into today, both are teams that most of our listeners never bet on. The number one ATS team so far this year is South Dakota at 16-2 against the spread. The worst team this year, South Dakota State at 2-15 against the spread. Teams you normally don't think of, but teams that you should start looking at because Vegas doesn't adjust. If UCLA was 16-2, that line would be adjusted 6 points this weekend, like we've seen the NFL totals go in the Green Bay-Atlanta game. But South Dakota doesn't get the love. They covered again last night. South Dakota State failed to cover again last night, both by double digits. And you have two teams that combined 31-4 against the spread. By the way, they played on New Year's Eve. South Dakota did cover that game by a point. Those two teams match up again February 11th. But the other couple teams I want to talk about is I don't look at a team as a favorite and say they're 5-0 and say, wow, they're a great team as a favorite. I like looking at a team that is positive as a favorite and negative as a dog. That means you have both sides of the picture. When they're a favorite, they play well. When they're a dog, they don't. Or likewise. I like a team looking at a team that's good as a dog and bad as a favorite. So you don't just have one situation to look at. You have both sides of the equation, and teams are playing to what you expect of them. You know, a couple at the top of the list, Florida, East Tennessee, Idaho State, and Princeton. All of those teams are teams that you want to play the favorite when those guys play. The favorite in Florida games now 12-3. The favorite in East Tennessee State games 12-3. The favorite in Idaho State games 10-2. And the favorite in Princeton games 9-1. So a couple off-the-wall teams. But again, Princeton performs well as a favorite, poor as a dog. Both situations play into that role. On the opposite side, a couple teams to play the dog on. Maryland and Michigan in the Big Ten. When Maryland plays basketball, the underdog is 13-3. Melo Tremble is a great guard, but when Maryland gets to be on the road as a small favorite, they lose those games. When they're a big favorite, they don't get the margin. But as a dog in a matchup where they're looking that, boy, they can pull the upset here, great. Same thing with Michigan, 13-3, 11-3. And another team people don't know of, Samford, down in the Ohio Valley Conference, Samford 11-1 against the spread when you're playing the dog in their games. So, again, a lot of situations, but I like looking at both roles. We'll talk about home and away next week where teams are great as a home and poor on the road and vice versa, that you're getting a well-rounded team to look at. So I have these lists of my top 10 home, aways, road dogs, and when I see a matchup that they're playing against each other, and I'll give you one on Saturday. Charlotte, 11-4. The favorite in Charlotte games, 11-4. The dog in Old Dominion games, 11-5. Those two face off. We'll see what happens this Saturday.
Excellent. I think it's a really, really strong point to leave off on. Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. I know you got that guide that we've already mentioned a little bit, and of course that's available to download free over at WagerTalk. But what else is going on at the website right now?
You know, I've run a couple specials for your guys. They've been so-so on the weeks, you know. But a couple people have that have contacted me have asked for longer periods of time. So I'm going to let your listeners pick a package they want. I'm going to allow them to shoot me an email, calsports@aol.com. They can buy a week and get a week free. A week of my service, $89 for 7 full days. I'm going to give them 2 weeks for that $89. Just shoot me an email, 14 days of service, $89, calsports@aol.com.
Well, Ralph, thank you so much for your time, man. Really, really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Great stuff there with Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Definitely take advantage of that great opportunity there. A guy that gets it, you know, and a guy that in a lot of ways maybe aligns more with some of our listeners because it is looking at the schedule. It's looking at, you know, a lot of these situational elements. It's, you know, it's not an extremely detailed, you know, analytical point of view. I mean, we try to bring you all of the different types of perspectives here. I think all the handicappers that we have on the show are really, really great in how they go about their business in their own specific ways. So I would certainly recommend any of them, but I think that's a really generous and probably fruitful offer there from Ralph Michaels. Coming up on our Friday show, we will have the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Still nailing down our last guest. I have a pretty good idea of who it is, but I don't want to say anything as of yet. You'll just have to tune in to find out who that is. So that'll do it today. Thank you very much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.